Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and Moline. More information is available from Bob Baisdiffer in Danville at 217-477-6016. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for December 16th, 2010. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group in Decatur, Illinois. In agricultural news, the CFTC proposed new rules to rein in speculation in commodity markets. We'll have that and other stories this half hour. And Todd Gleason will be by with a look at cash rent, and we'll have agricultural weather. It's all on the Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
Here are how futures settled this Thursday afternoon in Kansas City. March wheat, 8.03 and a quarter down 8. May, 8.12 and a quarter down 7 and a quarter. July, 8.17 down 7 and a quarter. March wheat at the board, 7.49 and three quarters down 15. May, 7.76 and three quarters down 14 and a half. July, 7.87 and a half down 11 and a quarter. March corn, 5.87 and a half up 3 and a quarter. May, 5.95 and a half up 3 and a quarter. July, 5.99 up 3. September, 5.52 and a quarter up 3 and three quarters. December, 5.32 and a half up 4 and three quarters. January beans, 12.89 down 7 and a half. March, $13.50 down 7 and a quarter. May, 13.07 down 6 and three quarters. July, 13.09 and a quarter down 6 and three quarters. August, 12.86 down 4. September, 12.48 and three quarters down 1 and three quarters. January soybean meal, 3.43.80 down 2.30. January soybean oil, 54.07 down 13. December live cattle, 101.20 down 40. February lean hog, 74.57 and a half down 62 and one half. And those are Thursday's settlements in Chicago and Kansas City.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and Moline. More information is available from Rob O'Malley in Champaign at 217-378-7633. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
Here are the weather highlights from meteorologist Drew Lerner. He says snow and a little freezing drizzle will continue today from Minnesota and the Dakotas to Ohio and Kentucky. Another dusting to 3 inches is possible in some areas. Freezing drizzle mostly is possible in southern parts of the precipitation region. A cool bias in temperatures will remain through the next 10 days, but extremes will not be as cold as those of the past few mornings. A wintry mix of precipitation will fall lightly across the Midwest late this weekend and early next week. Snowfall of 1 to 3 inches is most likely from the Dakotas and Nebraska to Michigan and northern Ohio Monday into Tuesday. Weekend precipitation will not be very great. A second snow event is possible in the Midwest December 22nd through the 24th.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Dan Zwicker of ADM and Grain Group in Decatur, Illinois. Good afternoon, Dan.
Hi, Dave.
Before we get to particulars, I would be interested in your analysis of how you think the market has traded in December thus far, and do we have any chance yet in your mindset of having a market that moves outside the November range?
Well, that's basically what we've done so far, is we made that sharp break to the downside there last trading day of November. We actually reversed the market up basically around November 23rd here on corn. And then we started December with a sharp move to the upside, and we've basically have stayed within that November range. My guess is that we'll stay in that range. We've had a pretty nice sideways to higher climb, especially when you look at corn. Today's close, I think, is right up against the highest close of the month. So if we're off of it, we're only off of it by a half cent or so, despite yesterday having kind of a little reversal to the downside. The fundamental story in corn is just too strong, I think, to see any big break to the downside. But, you know, when you get into the last 10 days of the marketing year and you get into index fund rebalancing, you get into long liquidation or maybe new establishment of longs, about anything can happen because the volume begins to dry up and you could probably see some bigger moves. But I don't see anything bullish at this point to take us right on up through the top. But as soon as I say that, tomorrow morning the dollar could be down to 200 points and a full-fledged drought going on in Argentina, and away we go. But I think that's the big spot in corn, is to watch the Argentine weather near term. There is some rain coming in, but then it's supposed to turn hot and dry again. And if that would continue, that's going to ratchet up the pressure of a declining world crop and could send corn higher. But I'm doubtful that we could see a higher high. I think we're going to stay in this November range, and then we're going to see what USJ has to tell us on January 12th.
The November lows, could it be that they provide solid support all the way till we get a crop in the ground?
Very well could be. I mean, as a technician, you can kind of view this late November decline, or the decline that we had off of the November crop report high, as maybe the start of a new 20-week cycle to the upside that we may look back at as a very important low point. This market just continues to climb as we go on into the spring months. And until the market, I think, it feels more comfortable with some kind of corn production number. I've done a lot of outlook meetings here over the past month or so, and you know, basically the corn trade would like to see a planted acres number, probably 92, 93 million acres. That's compared to 88 million here this past year. And anything short of that is going to be a nail biter. I mean, you're going to have perfect weather and to get that 165 bushel yield or so to raise a crop big enough to meet projected demand, and it'll be snug at that point. So when you look down the road, corn stocks look to be fairly tight for the next couple years or so.
Would you think that to reach those kind of numbers, above 90 million acres of corn, and given the fact that we need a pretty substantial soybean crop as well, and cotton is coming on, and sorghum's coming on a little bit, might we be looking at going back, like we did a year or two ago, back into using marginal land?
Well, that's what the market, that's what price strength in commodities is all about, clear across the board, is basically to increase production, not only of the food commodities, the metal commodities, all raw materials. It reminds me very similar to the price strength that we had during the 70s, where all of your commodities was pretty well hot ownership. And then, of course, that eventually turned into overproduction as we brought new lands into production. I mean, basically the 70s is what triggered the big expansion in agricultural development in Brazil and South America. Back in the 70s, I think the Brazilian crop was 5 million tons or less of soybeans, and you can see what it is here today. The total South American crop is could be as high as, 110, depending upon how weather plays out. But so that is what the function of the market here is to increase technology, try to increase yields, try to increase new lands, new drilling for oil, new mining for metals, the whole, because when you look at the growing economy or the developing economies of India and China, they require a lot of new production in commodities.
Let's turn our attention then to the soybeans and its technicals. Kind of a choppy day as you look there.
Yeah, it is. And, of course, soybeans had a little disappointment in the weekly export sales here today. And since I talked to you here this morning, Dave, I visited with a few people, and they kind of feel that maybe this China thing is going to slow down for a while in here for at least a couple weeks, and then we'll see what happens at that point. So if China is slowing things down a little bit, that could give the soybean market at least an opportunity to break to the downside. How much decline we get remains to be seen, but if China kind of backs out of the market for a little bit in here, it probably won't be too bad for the 2 weeks, but if they don't come in after a two-week sitting on the bench, then the market gets real nervous. But South America, we still have a ways to go yet before that South American crop is made down there. We have dry weather in Argentina now. We are supposed to get some rains over the weekend, but it's going to dry back up again. And if you look at a typical La Nina weather pattern, that dryness in Argentina during December is supposed to move northward as you get into January, February for Brazil. And if that would materialize, all of a sudden you've got a little different picture of supply coming out of South America, and that would change price scenarios pretty quickly here in the first of the year.
Would a break in the beans technically be healthy, and at what point would it be not so healthy on the breaking?
Well, you probably don't want to see us go down underneath that November low. I think if beans stay an inside month, as we talked about corn, then the rule of thumb is you need to kind of watch how the next month goes. So January, if you would begin to penetrate the December high, that would be technically viewed as a green light that we're going to renew the upward momentum of the rally that we've had here in the last half of 10. If you break below the December low, then I would tell you a little different story, that we would maybe begin a seasonal decline into the February-March time frame, or when the South American crop begins to come on or come off the fields.
Thank you very much, Dan.
Very well, Dave.
That's Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group, and he is in Decatur, Illinois.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
In agricultural news, the U.S. futures regulator today set out its most aggressive steps yet to prevent speculators from distorting commodity markets, but it relented on several provisions that were fiercely opposed by Wall Street banks and large commodity traders. The Commodity Futures Trading Commission's proposal to set position limits showed the agency had taken heed of objections raised since January. But the core principle was unchanged, restricting the number of swaps and futures contracts that speculators can hold in energy, metals, and agricultural derivatives markets, a rule it estimated could affect nearly 80 agricultural traders and dozens of metals and energy players. The new rules attempts to draw a clearer line between financial players who have flooded commodity markets with over $350 billion over the past decade and the traditional traders who often take large positions to hedge their own or customers' physical trading. But the CFTC removed a proposal that would have made it harder for any company to run both speculative and hedging books. CFTC also appeared to relax a provision which requires companies to combine positions across any firms in which they own more than 10%. It said a firm may be allowed to exclude those positions if the investment is passive and the stakeholder does not participate in management. The year-long omnibus spending bill introduced in the Senate would increase funding for the Commodity Futures Trading Commission by 69%, or $117.2 million, to $286 million, compared with fiscal year 2010. Spending on the Security and Exchange Commission would increase 18%. The CFTC funding increase would go towards supporting staffing increases and information technology enhancements. China's commitment to resume purchases of U.S. beef after a 7-year suspension drew praise from the U.S. meat industry on Wednesday. U.S. agriculture and trade officials said they expected a staged reopening of China's market to U.S. beef. The market has been closed since late 2003, when the U.S. reported its first case of mad cow disease. USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack said there would be technical talks soon, with the goal of reopening China's market in early 2011. The leaders of India and China today called for a stronger partnership, a huge increase in trade, and even the creation of an emergency hotline, as they stressed a spirit of cooperation, not competition, between Asia's two rising powers. But little movement appeared to have been made on the key issue of concern to India, opening Chinese markets. At their meeting today, China and India agreed to work to increase trade between the two countries from $60 billion to $100 billion a year by 2015. South Korea upgraded its alert against foot and mouth disease as the outbreak, first reported in late November, spread to a region just north of the capital, Seoul. The outbreak has prompted the authorities to shut down livestock markets throughout the country. More than 120,000 cattle and pigs have been culled. General Mills says it sold more cereal and snacks in the second quarter, but higher commodity costs and lower selling prices left adjusted earnings short of expectations. The maker of Cheerios says net income rose 9% to $613.9 million, or 92 cents a share. That compares with $565.5 million, or 83 cents per share last year. General Mills' U.S. retail revenue was flat at $2.85 billion. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Cash renting a farm in Illinois is more likely today than it was a decade ago. Todd Gleason explores the reasons why and the implications of this transfer of risk.
While the price of land has risen sharply in the last 6 years, the cost of cash rents haven't kept up. I know it's hard to believe, but that's the way the numbers shake out in the University of Illinois FBFM, or Farm Business, Farm Management, Record Keeping Data. And Nick Paulson polled the stats. He's an ag economist at the University of Illinois and says according to the U of I crop budgets, land costs have represented 30-35% of total production costs for Illinois grain operations over the past 6 years. Despite consistent upward trends in cash rent levels, this actually represents a decline in similar measures from the early 90s, says Paulson.
Land values have increased at a, I would say, significantly faster rate than cash rents. Cash rents have consistently increased, but the rate at which they've increased has mimicked more the increase in commodity prices, expected revenues that we see from farmland, and also the increase in production costs for grain production.
Since 1990, the average cash rent in Illinois has increased by about 70%, from $100 to the acre to $169 per acre in 2010. And according to the USDA's Agricultural Land Values and Cash Rents Annual Summary, over that same 20-year period, both crop revenues and non-land production costs for grain operations have more than doubled. These trends have been most pronounced over the past 5 years due to the significant rise in both agricultural commodity and energy prices. So, cash rents are lagging land values. There may be a significant and good reason for that to happen. Cash rent shifts all the risk of farming to the farmer.
It has a big implication for the amount of risk that farmers are taking on. I think it's a result of changes in the characteristics of farmland owners. Over time, we've seen more non-farm interest in farmland as an investment. We now have more institutional farmland investors, farmland owners. Cash rental agreements are also a little bit easier to work with in terms of it puts having to deal with government payments completely on the farmer. The landowner does not have to worry about income limitations or dealing with the local FSA office in terms of collecting direct payments, countercyclical payments, any kind of LDPs, and things like that. So, from a landowner's perspective, it's pretty obvious why a cash rent would be probably preferred, especially for someone who may be an absentee landowner or not directly familiar with agriculture. They don't have to do any marketing. They don't have to worry about procuring inputs. The decision-making can be put entirely on the producer. They don't have to deal with any of the risks. They don't have to deal with any of the federal government programs. And they get a fixed payment every year from the farmer just for owning the land.
In the state of Illinois, Nick Paulson notes the average proportion of total acres that are operated under a share rent agreement has fallen from about 48% in 1997 to 37% in 2009. Over the same time period, the proportion of total acres operated under cash rent agreements has increased from just over 25% to approximately 40%, while ownership rates among grain farm operators have declined slightly from 25 to 23%. And while economic theory would suggest that farmers should earn a premium for taking on additional risk with cash rent, lower farm returns have been linked to Illinois farms, which cash rent a significant proportion of their total acreage. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
It's National Chocolate Covered Anything Day. It's also Eat What You Want Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1773, American colonists revolted against the British government. Dressing up as Native Americans and armed with small hatchets and clubs, they boarded the Dartmouth and Beaver and Eleanor. From the ship holds, they dumped over 90,000 pounds of tea overboard. an event that would become to be known as the Boston Tea Party. Tea washed up on the shores around Boston for weeks. In 1833, Seaman Ashiel Knapp was born. An American agriculturalist, he began the system which evolved into the U.S. Cooperative Extension Service. He introduced improved methods of farming into Louisiana, spurred the development of rice culture in the Southwest, demonstrated methods for curbing the boll weevil in Texas, and inaugurated a federal program of farm demonstrations throughout the South. Knapp's legacy was to bring progressive agricultural methods to the American farmer. In 1863, Gerald Heineken purchased the Amsterdam brewery, the Haystack, which dated back to 1592. This was the beginning of Heineken beer. In 1884, William Fruin of Minneapolis, Minnesota, patented an automatic liquid vending machine. And in 1990, Harland Sanders died at Shelbyville, Kentucky. He is best known as the founder of Kentucky Fried Chicken. And that's this day in agricultural history. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us for our look at the agricultural weather is meteorologist Peter Levitt. Good afternoon, Peter.
Good afternoon, Dave.
It's the third Thursday. That means it's time for NOAA's 30 and 90 day outlooks. What do they have to tell us?
Well, they have the temperature departures for the month of January on the 30 day forecast are below normal in the upper Midwest, mostly Minnesota, Wisconsin, and near normal everywhere else except in the southwestern portion of the plains east of the Rockies, where they have above normal temperatures in southwest Texas, and then a ribbon of below normal temperatures along the west coast, which is a result of the abnormally cold ocean temperatures out there this year. For precipitation, they've got it normal for most of the Midwest, and they've got it normal down the Mississippi Valley, dry in the entire southwest and southeast, and the wet areas of the Pacific Northwest and the northwestern plains, and from the Kentucky area up the Appalachians, covering Ohio, but leaving most of the Midwest, as I said, out of the picture for above normal amounts and looking for equal chance weather, or call that normal for the time being. The 90-day forecast continues to have cold weather in the upper Great Lakes and along the northern tier of states westward to the west coast. They have warm weather from Arizona eastward through the southern half of the country, then normal from about Georgia and Carolinas on eastward. And they have wet weather from the entire northern tier of states, dry from about southern Minnesota southwestward into the southwest, dry in the southeast, and very wet for the February-March period, certainly, on the three-month forecast, January through March, from Arkansas northeastward right up through the eastern Corn Belt state. So at least some moisture coming toward the tail end of winter. That's the 90 and 30-day forecasts, and a little bit of more of the same.
The other thing that we're keeping an eye on is Argentina and a rain event potentially this weekend. What can you tell us?
Oh, I think they're going to be a little bit disappointed in that this weekend. They need a lot of rain, especially in some of those southern areas, to get decent germination and development for the crop. It looks as though those summer crops are suffering from a slow growth, maybe it's stunted growth down in there. I guess they can keep their fingers crossed, but my guess is they'll be shortchanged a little bit. Best precipitation is across the border to the northeast, where Brazil has been getting abundant showers and appears to be in very good shape. But I'd still be a little bit concerned about the Argentine.
Thank you very much, Peter.
My pleasure.
That's agricultural meteorologist Peter Levitt. And that is today's Closing Market Report. You can listen to the show again on our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. You can also subscribe to the podcast of this and other broadcasts on Illinois Public Media. You can do that in the right navigation window. This is Dave Dickey.